Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World Headquarters, I'm Charlie Pellett. Stocks continue to trade lower, 13 minutes to go ahead of the close. The Dow, the S&P, NASDAQ, all trading down. We have got the S&P 500 index down 0.3%. Looking like an up week, though, for the S&P 500 index. The S&P dropping 6 points now to 2140. Dow Industrials down 70, also a drop of 0.4%. NASDAQ is down 3, a drop there of 0.1%. Tenure up 1/32, the yield 1.69%. Gold down 5.70 the ounce to 13.08, a drop of 0.4%. And crude oil, West Texas Intermediate, down 1.5%, 43.23 for a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude. I'm Charlie Pellett, and that's a Bloomberg Business Flash.
You're listening to Taking Stock with Kathleen Hayes and Pim Fox on Bloomberg Radio.
All right, it's time now for the ETF report. It is brought to you by Herco, an American industrial technology company with global reach and a long history of disruptive innovation. To learn more about Herco, visit HURCO.com/investors. NASDAQ ticker symbol HURC. Let's go to Catherine Cowdery for the exchange-traded fund report.
The Federal Reserve is giving some gold investors a case of the jitters. Over the past week, investors have pulled $698 million from Spider Gold Shares, or GLD. It's the largest ETF backed by the metal. Cohen & Steers Capital Management was overweight on gold until last week, when comments from some Fed officials boosted speculation that the central bank will raise interest rates as soon as this month. That would make gold less competitive as an asset class compared to interest-bearing investments. Cohen & Steers decided to play it safe and lowered its gold allocation. Overall holdings in GLD have dropped from a three-year high that was reached in July. The gold rally has stumbled after the metal posted its best first half in almost four decades. There's increasing caution over interest rates and the rising dollar. Gold has given up its second-half price gain. That's your Bloomberg ETF report. I'm Catherine Cowdery.
You're listening to Taking Stock with Kathleen Hayes and Pim Fox on Bloomberg Radio.
The election and your investments. Doug Ciocca is the chief executive officer and partner of Cavar Capital Partners, helping to manage nearly $500 million. He's based in Leawood, Kansas. He can be followed on Twitter at Doug Ciocca, C-I-O-C-C-A. All right, Doug Ciocca, what is the relationship between presidential elections and market cycles?
Hey, Pim, good afternoon, and thanks for having me on. I think that there are myriad correlations or corollaries that are drawn between the election and the markets, and I think the implications for the investor are probably more intense than they are for the market. Right? This is a much more emotional than it is an economic consideration. Elections themselves, by virtue of their design, are binary events, but the influence of their outcome, I mean, it's very, very progressive. So people are considering, boy, there's got to be another erosion of confidence in this market, which has been thin to begin with, because the margin of victory of this election, it could be historically small. Then we look at congressional alignment and is that the prospect of persistent gridlock. Then we're finally experiencing something that we should have expected in an election year all along, is an elevation of market volatility. So the confluence of rising rates and this ambiguous presidential election result, I think that is what's making the current environment somewhat combustible. But again, a lot of this is very short-term in nature, and the long-term implications that we are trying to share and preach to our clients have a lot, the performance is going to have a lot more to do with the state of the economy, the valuation of equity markets, the current cost of capital, than it is going to have anything to do with the next occupant of the Oval Office.
All right. So having said that, where are you suggesting that investors put their money?
Yeah, I mean, if you think of the world, right, within which we have opportunities to invest, you can characterize it by kind of three traits. You've got slow growth. You've got flat yield curves, and flat, I guess, would be an implication of a positive component of a yield curve, which is not the case all around the world.
I was going to say, but though it is steepening. Just to hang on there, but when you talk about the yield curve, right? I mean, haven't we seen a steepening in the yield curve for U.S. Treasuries?
A little bit, and I think it's been interesting to watch just this week, right? We
right.
saw an absolute sell-off on the long end, and we saw a little bit of a rally on the short end, and this was on Lael Brainard's comments on Monday, and the CPI this morning that came out, we've seen a little bit of backup on the long end, and we've seen a little tightening on the short end as it raises the prospect of at least maybe consideration of putting September back on the table, which we think is very unlikely. But historically speaking, Pim, we're talking about pretty flat curves because we do have, even though we may see a little bit of thaw into the winter, we have a frozen Fed. If they do anything, I think it will be under the title of being symbolic than it is impactful if it's a quarter or an eighth even of a point that takes place going into the year end. But slow growth, flat curve, frozen Fed, we think expected returns higher away from the U.S. than in the U.S. And we're thinking about places for capital that have more of an economic than an interest rate sensitivity to them.
Such as?
Companies that so healthcare stocks.
But you're talking global healthcare then?
Correct. Absolutely. And again, if you think about companies that sell products or offer services that have very high inelasticity of demand, that will always tend toward healthcare, particularly now when valuations become more attractive given the political punching bag that sector is.
Could that be an example like Johnson & Johnson? And they just announced today the purchase of Abbott's eye surgery unit, more than $4.25 billion.
Which is, we absolutely think that the healthcare sector is kind of that proverbial coiled spring of consolidation that awaits. And whether they need some clearance because of the legislative clouds, we're still coming off of the anti-inversion regime that Pfizer was whacked down with. We've got the EpiPen public relations and pricing debacle. We've got Martin Shkreli that's still in people's vernacular. And healthcare has been absolutely under assault, and in not every case undeservedly so. But I think when J&J, who after making that acquisition today, stock is very stable. We're seeing a rally in Abbott because that unlocking of value in a depressed sector is an invariability for profit-seeking opportunists.
Well, irony of ironies that, the Abbott eye surgery unit, Abbott Labs Medical Optics, it was at one point owned by Allergan. Turn your attention now to, all right, so we talked about healthcare, global healthcare. What else outside the United States?
Consumer staples. Consumer staple sectors. You and I have spoken in the past about our company's penchant for the proverbial sin stocks, right? Companies that sell self-indulgent products, be they tobacco or alcohol, fast food, caffeine, things of that nature that, again, have the high inelasticity of demand that could be beneficiaries of strange currency meanderings, but they're seeing elevation of their cash flows. One of the things that's been fascinating over the last 18 months has been the success of these low volatility ETFs, right? I'm sure you've spoken to people on your program about, boy, this is a comforting spot in an otherwise ambiguous market. Low vol, low vol, low vol. And low vol has a connotation of high free cash flow, which is high dividends, which backs into those sectors that I just mentioned. Internationally, it has not been the case. And internationally, if you have low vol, because you've got brand franchises that have discounted values, they are bound to attract some capital, particularly when you get a little more extraction of the benefits of monetary policy, which are far more in their infancy overseas than they are here. And what we learned from Mario Draghi last week is he may not take it beyond that Keynesian endpoint, right? They may actually eliminate that super accommodative monetary policy before it does more harm than good.
Would Starbucks fall into this category? You mentioned caffeine, and it's global, and I understand they're going to be opening 400 stores in China this year.
A company like that would be a great example.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
What about looking for
Absolutely.
Dividends?
I think that's critical, right? And again, the only thing that leaves it less desirable is it's been so popular because the yield curve has been so weak for so long that income-starved investors have taken a little more risk and moved money into equity that otherwise would be allocated to fixed income. But I think dividends have to be critical as evidence of financial security of companies. The best thing you want to do if you're looking for dividend-paying companies here or overseas is be sure they are not levered dividends that have payout ratios that are not sustainable. So we're screening for that with activity so we can look for balance and we can look for focus. And focus is a connotation of active management that we think as this market and the investor sort of traverses this tightrope between Washington and Wall Street, between economic ambiguity and interest rate ambiguity, you need to have the balance, and you also have that focus that would be active management with high free cash flow investments.
Hey, Doug, Ari, so we did healthcare. You talked about the dividend aspect of investing, as well as giving your thoughts on the global nature. What about investing in defense stocks? They certainly are global.
They're global, and again, I mean that would have to fit a quant screen that for us is not often identified companies in that sector as attractive.
Got it.
So I do think that if you were going to play that based on the outcome of the election, it'd be difficult. If you go back to when Obama won in 2008, right, there were certain sectors that the world was assuming were going to
right.
perform terribly. Just the opposite has happened. A gun company like Sturman Ruger is a great example.
Got it. All right. Thanks very much. We got to run. Doug Sciocca is the chief executive officer and partner of Cavar Capital Partners based in Leawood, Kansas. This is Bloomberg.